Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. It's the 26th of April, 2024. Today I'm going to do another in the series Interesting Times, and I'm going to comment upon an interview with Professor Steven Pinker, which was conducted on the Radio 4 Today programme this morning. I don't remember who the interviewer was. In this case, but you can check it out if it sounds interesting to you, because it will be archived on the BBC Sound app, and you can get at most of this stuff. So you can kind of check the veracity of my account of what went on there. I'm going to range a little bit wider than simply talking about Pinker, who is, to my mind, not a particularly interesting thinker, other than the things that he gets wrong. Anyway, the gist of the interview this morning was that Professor Pinker was asked to comment by the Radio 4 presenter on the current campus unrest in the US, which kicked off, I think, about 9 or 10 days ago on the campus of Columbia University, New York. A scenario in which an encampment, an Occupy-style encampment, was set up on the lawns of the campus at Columbia. Pinker opines that on balance, this is not really a great thing, and I'll go into the detail in a bit. Firstly, I want to say why the students are demonstrating. And their demands are that Columbia University disinvests in Israel. It does have investments in Israel. That it has nothing to do with any war-related research that Israel might benefit from. And that it calls for, as an institution, as a public institution in the United States, for a ceasefire, a complete ceasefire in Gaza, an end to the genocide in Gaza. To my mind, and I'll put my cards on the table here, laudable demands. Now, this event has triggered similar events all across the US, and I suspect that this thing will spread across the world. I'm not sure what's happening in the UK yet, but if nothing's happened yet, it surely is going to pretty soon, I would imagine. So that's the context. About Pinker, Pinker's a public intellectual. He's the Johnstone Family Professor of Psychology at Harvard University. And this must be one of the most prestigious professorships on the planet, at one of the most prestigious universities on the planet, and a very, very rich university, which has got a great treasury of gifts from alumni going back to the foundation of Harvard. It's one of the oldest, if not the oldest, universities in America too. So it's got a lot of money, a lot of clout, produces a lot of illustrious alumni. In fact, the treasury of Harvard probably exceeds the entire assets of many nation states. It's very, very rich, very influential. And yet, Professor Pinker, despite a very impressive range of populist, semi-philosophical writings, to my mind, is an exemplar of that liberal American public intellectual. Bland, liberal in the old sense of John Locke. And really, just very, very thin. It's almost like depthless. I find this to be an American thing. I mean, he's very clever, massively productive, and nine books, I think, and a couple of technical books on language. He's all about language acquisition and those kind of topics. But what I can't forgive him for is he's basically apologising all over the place for capitalism and claiming that it will slowly but surely reduce poverty on planet Earth to zero. Now, I've tackled this claim before, very, very early on, actually. If you look through the podcast, you'll find it. Did a podcast on poverty, and I took a bit of a dive on the best figures I could find from the United Nations and so on. And basically, Pinker's theory is not empirically justified. And I think this is a bit of wish fulfilment. You know, the truth, justice in the American way is the way to go. So basically, Pinker's one of these clever but stupid people that thinks capitalism's God's gift and the American Constitution is God's gift. And he's basically in the business of shilling for business as usual whilst covering the deeply reactionary nature of such a world view with a kind of a gloss of liberality. I mean, for instance, he advocates for the legalisation of drugs, you know, same-sex marriage and things of that type. And free speech, of course, as a liberal, free speech, you know, the great ferment of ideas, you know, the public town hall and all that nonsense. So I'm not a fan of Pinker, as you might, you know, imagine, and I don't think he acquitted himself very well on Radio 4 this morning. And neither did the interviewer who didn't push him. He could have been pushed. He should have been pushed, to my mind. Because Pinker is basically saying that because the protest and the encampment at Columbia is actually getting in the way of the business of the university, that it should be, the encampment should be removed by the campus police and so on. Now, these protests are going on all over America, and I've taken a big interest in this today, and I've looked at a lot of mainstream news channels, CNN, Fox News even, and so on. And so you can see where the right wing, the American mainstream line is running, and it's running, of course, in defence of Israel, though of course that's getting harder and harder to do by the day. And the people who were shilling for the genocide earlier on are now realising that they're not looking so good, that they might not be on the right side of history, and they're trying to creep backwards, exactly as I predicted they would. So you've seen a bit of that as well. But most of the reporting seems to focus on and give more time to than any other element of the events, more time to the so-called discomfort of Zionist Jewish students who are complaining that they don't feel safe on the campus, on this or that campus. Now, in places where the police haven't been called and campus police haven't intervened, these protests are very peaceful. And I have to say there are many Jews at the protests taking the pro-Palestinian stance, expressing a solidarity with the ordinary Palestinians who have in their lives shattered, even if they manage to survive the onslaught, the ethnic cleansing and the genocide that's going on in Gaza. And there are many, many, as I said, many prominent Jews, and also many academics are coming out with the students, and again, across the board. But Professor Pinker thinks free speech is a good thing, but naturally it has a limit. Like you, and of course, we understand all these arguments. You cannot shout fire in a crowded opera house, you know, when there is no fire, because people will get trampled. Yeah, okay, we understand all that. And he's claiming that this is a case of that, but it clearly isn't a case of anything like that. Pretty well everything that Pinker claimed is very, very easily refuted, and that's the first thing that he claimed. He's claiming that this is a case where free speech has to be limited. Well, I don't think so. One of the other things that Pinker tried to elaborate was the actual nature of the business of the university. And he described the business of the university as professors teaching and students learning. And I actually think that's pretty poor. Because really, a university should be a place where professors learn as well as teach, and they learn from their students, and they learn in an ongoing fashion from their teaching, and then in fact in which students teach, even though they may not know that they are teaching. It should be a group effort, a dialectical effort, through enthusiastic discussion analysis, dissection, synthesis, art, logic, and so on. All of these things need to be applied in the great business of learning, the great business of making knowledge great, and of availing ourselves of all the goods that we can get from learned discussion in a specialised environment. But Pinker's characterisation of the university is that, professors teach, students learn. They're there for us to pump this stuff into, and that's it. It's so thin, and then it characterises his thought. It's simplistic. He boils things down into these simplistic dualities, but of course the reality is nothing like that. The reality is at least teachers learn. And the other thing, of course, is that these campus occupations are massive learning opportunities for young people. And I'll go into that a bit more a bit later on. And also, he characterises that what's going on isn't free speech. It's intimidation. It's intimidation of the few Zionist Jewish students who are claiming they feel discomforted. And I think that that case, which we hear again and again and again, it really is kind of empty when there are plenty of Jewish students and Jewish staff taking the side of the students occupying the campuses, coming on their side. And I'll name Naomi Klein speaking up at one of the universities. And there are many others, and prominent Jewish intellectuals also coming in. And I actually just watched a video of an 88-year-old Holocaust survivor encouraging the students and saying that she feels so proud of them for taking the stance, because you have to take a stance. So I think the complaints of the students who are feeling that they are not safe, to my mind, they're in bad faith. They may actually feel that. But I would say to them, I can't address your feelings. You feel how you feel. But I would say that really it's not proportionate. And again, given how peaceful the demonstrations and the occupations are until the police are called in. Now, of course, when the police are called in, there's a lot of heads being cracked. I've seen videos of people being zip-tied and then tasered after they've been zip-tied. Professors wrestled to the ground by big men, female professors. I mean, it's pretty disgusting. The police go in and have a riot, and then we're told that the campus bums are intrinsically violent. When these camps are left alone, there isn't that kind of violence. Now, obviously, there is going to be some anti-Semitism. There is going to be some hatred against the Islamic students. Tempers are running hot. It's all running hot. And I think a certain cooling down wouldn't be a bad idea. But the police wading in and state troopers wading in is not the answer. But, of course, this violence is being fermented by the great and the good. I mean, none other than the Speaker of the House, one Mike Johnson, actually went to Columbia University, stood on the steps of the library and called for the cops to wade in, because Jews don't feel safe on campus and that this is not free expression. And, of course, we find Pinker echoing this right-wing Republican Nazi encouraging the cops to go and wade into the students. So I don't think this man has a leg to stand on. I wonder why the BBC wheeled him in and gave him such an easy ride, the great Professor Pinker. Just as an aside, how to go at Oxford University and its degrees, and it's more to do with a fetish and a reputation than it is to do with the reality. And the same seems to be the case with Harvard. If they got professors with so little intellectual discernment, you know. I was going to say that the guy's written a lot of books, he's very prolific, but my God, there's no depth to it. One of his other things is that, given he has this marvellous, I would say, propensity to dress up what's basically a reactionary world view, business as usual is an option, business as usual must be defended. We're going in the right direction. It can only get better. Things are getting better with the capitalism, with the finance running amok, with big oil running amok and pretending to be all green and right on in that respect, whilst burning the planet to a crisp in short order. And that he thinks all that's all right, basically. But of course he's able to wrap it up in this liberality, which I just mentioned. And he does this, he did this in the interview, and he said, oh well, we have campus police, you know, and they make sure that it's all going peacefully. Said, and any chair of a university will only call in municipal police, let alone the National Guard, very, very reluctantly. So he wraps it all up in reasonableness. But the truth is, the minute those guys are in there, they're cracking heads. They're arresting people for nothing. They're tasing people. There's tear gas. There's pepper spray. And here's the great professor trying to sound measured and professorially wise. And I find that disgusting, to be honest. And the other thing about Pinker is he thinks, oh, well, it's the law. We've got to follow the rules. We've got to have rules. It's the law. And that for him finishes it. It's the law. You know, they're disrupting the business of the university. Therefore, they're breaking the law. And therefore, the force of the law can be brought down upon them. That is bullshit. We all know that there are times when there is a matter of such urgency that the law has to take back seat. And this is one of those. It's not like these students are running amok and burning property and smashing up shop windows and all those kind of things and opening fire. They're not armed. They're sitting there. And in one case, and I think it was at Columbia University, the Jewish students who were expressing their solidarity with the Palestinian people hosted a seder, a Passover meal, which is a very civilised Jewish ritual as part of the Jewish faith, and held it for the attendance at the protest, which is rather a marvellous thing, I think. And at its best, this is what we're seeing. But, of course, it's strictly against the rules. But the matter which they're addressing is more urgent than any of your stupid rules about your stupid university, where second-rate, so-called great public intellectuals see their role as filling the empty vessel of students with their chosen shards and morsels of knowledge, which, of course, is complete horseshit. That's not what it is or what it should be. So, basically, I suppose this is me saying, well, fuck you, Stephen Pinker, and fuck you, the BBC, as usual. And fuck you, mainstream media, because your reporting is terrible. It's one-sided. So just to reiterate there, why I think this was a crappy interview. Pinker misses that the law can urgently need to be broken, and this is one of those cases. Nothing good happens, actually, without civil disobedience, and this is that. The other thing that he fails to mention, and which he should emphasise, is that there are plenty of Jews in the protest taking the side of solidarity with the Palestinian people, calling for the universities to divest where they have investments in Israel, and calling for the university to make a statement in favour of an absolute ineluctable ceasefire. Now, if anybody from a campus or any students are listening, and I think it's not likely, what I would say to you, not of course you want to listen to an old fart like me, but what I would say to you is go for it big style, occupy. And I think this is happening. I mean, I'm looking at trying to get a handle on how many universities are involved, you know. So far, Texas, Yale, UCLA, Princeton, City College, Harvard, as well as Columbia, of course, where it started. Now, there is an historical side to this. And that is that in 1968, a campus protest in Columbia started off a wave of protests across the country against the Vietnam War, in which there was massive amounts of police violence huge amounts of state trooper violence, and National Guard violence, of course, culminating in the infamous Kent State University massacre, in which the troops opened fire on demonstrating students, and I think 7 were killed. I don't know the exact number, but there was, I mean, this is a mark of infamy upon American history. The massacre of students by troops. The army of a state opening fire on its young people, on its young students, on its hope for the future, on its future professionals, its future lawmakers, its future doctors, its future intellectuals. That's a blast. And if there was a God, I'd pray to that God that doesn't happen this time, because be absolutely sure this is what's going to happen. And I say to you, if any of you are listening to me, which again, highly unlikely, I don't have any kind of a following, but this is your Vietnam moment. You're on the right side of history. Nobody now condemns the students for going out in 68. And remember, it spread all over the planet. Of course, the famous Paris 68, but of course it happened all over the United Kingdom, the universities. It happened all over Europe. It certainly happened all over America. It was enormous. And it was the turning of the tide on the Vietnam War, which was a genocide on the Vietnamese people for daring to choose left-wing leaders. So this is your Vietnam moment. You will be on the right side of history. But there's a couple of things I want to say to you. I mean, don't intimidate other people. If Zionist Jews want to sit in the corner of the campus, leave them alone. Let them do it. Why not? Free speech. Let's go for it wholly. And if you can talk to them civilly, find out what they're thinking. Persuade them to listen to you and say what you're thinking. Now, the chances are you will lose your tempers and all the rest of it, but if you can, don't intimidate, it won't help. But the other thing I'm saying is that, of course, when you make a demand, you are in a sense positioning yourself as a supplicant. And I would say it's time for us to stop being supplicants, we of the revolutionary persuasion. Don't be a supplicant. Because when you demand, you give to the power of the person upon you, whom you are making the demands. You confer upon them the power to grant the demand. What you should do is make the future. Take it. Don't demand it. Take it. And to do this properly, you have to create it. So I'm saying, while you're there on the lawn, create it. Discuss how you can create it. Turn it into a seminar. Turn it into an educational opportunity. Because I'll tell you, when you're my age, and I'm the same age as the NACBA, I'm the same age as the UK Health Service, when you're my age, you'll look upon it as the most formative, the most powerful, most wonderful time of your life. Probably up there with the birth of your first child or something like that. And I'll tell you that. I've been there. I'm an old fart. And I would like to be of some use in this. And what I can do is say to you, absolutely take this advantage to educate yourself. And if any of your professors are coming with you, get them. Ask them nicely to impart their wisdom. Challenge them if you want to. Try and keep it a bit level-headed if you can. Though I know you will get stirred. And you will not regret it. Pinker is absolutely wrong. This is a wonderful opportunity to learn. You're not suspending the operation of the university. You are extending it into its proper realm, which is deep, deep questioning, deep, deep discussion, and dive as deep as you can. And of course, that also means you must dive as deep as you can into yourself. Find your motives. Find your own inner fascist. Find your own inner Buddha, because it's all there. Dive deep into this and discuss, and strategize. You're only young. There's a lot of stuff that you'll only get in 50 years' time. But now's the time to start learning all that stuff. Yeah. And You know, Pinker is wrong. Pinky's just wrong. So to the student, to the Zionist students who are sitting in the corner saying that they feel threatened, and whose side is being taken by the great and the good, including the Speaker of the House, who can, with his influence, no doubt, bring in the National Guard to have everybody's head cracked and for people to be arrested and given criminal records, and for professors to get sacked, perfectly good professors to get sacked. So I say to you, I do take cognizance, you do feel discomforted. I understand it. It's horrible. And it should be recognised. But I would ask you to look, as I've just said to the pro-Palestinian students, to look deep and to look deep at the world and look very, very deeply into yourself as well. Because for your part, how about you take some solidarity with the students of the universities of Gaza, whose institutions have been flattened, every single one of them. I forget how many universities there were in Gaza. Half a dozen or so. They've all been flattened. They're not operative. They've all been flattened by high explosives, supplied very, very kindly by the United States military-industrial complex, mainly Boeing, who, of course, make these huge bombs that flatten buildings in one go. How about some solidarity with them, at least with the ones who survived, who are still alive and are now not rotting under the rubble? So, okay, all power to you. May this spread. May the student activism spread. The other thing I would tell you you need to do is network with students on other campuses. Network with other movements as far and wide as you can. Find your natural networkers. Organise so that you can send them out to network. Form connections as far and wide as you can. See if you can get labour unions involved like they did in France. It's very important. These are the people who have the power to turn out the lights. You can rebuild your society when you, rather than demanding of the hegemon that it gives you rights, that you take the rights, you take the ability to build the new society and the new world. Because if you don't, you're not going to have a world to live in. And it's your world. It's not my world. I'm not going to be here very much longer. It's your world. And you need to take it and build it and create it now. And these encampments are a very, very great opportunity to start doing that. Okay, so if you've listened, thank you for listening. And make knowledge great again. Over and out. Lots of love.